The Macho Madness is back, and so is the IWC podcast. We have lots to talk about today. I'm excited. I'm ready to go. Are you ready to go, Chris Walder?
I'm just happy that the Savage impression is back.
It is back, and so am I. James Borbath, a.k.a. the guy who does the Randy Savage impression on this program, along with Chris Walder, to talk some wrestling with you all for the next hour or hour and 20 minutes, depending on how long it goes. Kind of an uneventful week in WWE. They had their Raw show. It was what it was. I thought the Warrior tribute was done just to the right level, I thought. The one thing they did get right on this show, I thought, was the tribute to the Ultimate Warrior. The rest of the show, I'm not so sure, but I thought they got the tribute part right, at least.
Well, I'm glad they didn't take up the entire show, like, filling it up with all of these, like, major tributes. They had some videos throughout the night, which we all expected, and they had the 10-bell ring at the start and had every one of the superstars come out, so I thought that was touching. But, yeah, I mean, coming off the Raw after WrestleMania, everything was just going to be a lot less exciting, I suppose.
And the guys that Chris Walder hates, the Usos, best tribute of the night, both had half of the Warrior face paint. Real nice touch. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I hate the Usos, but yeah, everyone was pointing out how cool their face paint was, so I'll give them some love for that.
You got to warm up to the Usos, man. They're what's happening in WWE tag team wrestling today.
If only they had a challenger, like a half-decent challenger for those belts. They can't keep throwing Batista and Orton at them.
Well, yeah, that was the theme of the show. The Shield were basically booked as your top babyfaces, with Daniel Bryan off on his honeymoon, celebrating with Brie Bella somewhere in Hawaii, and rightfully so. The Shield took over as the top babyface on the program, and it all led to a just bizarre main event with an 11-on-3 match and the reemergence of Evolution at the end of it all to a crowd that basically could care less, and I'm not even sure if they remembered Evolution at all.
Yeah, how young was that crowd? Because they did not pop whatsoever for when Motorhead Line in the Sand came on. I was so excited when Evolution came out and we heard the music, but yeah, the WWE Universe just did not give a damn about it.
Yeah, the crowd did not seem to pop, but the internet definitely seemed to pop for that. I mean, the audience online that was watching, and I take it as a representation of who's watching, they seemed to be into this far more than what they were into it in the actual crowd. But still, I'm not sure I'm a big fan of all of this. I get where we're going. We're going to have Evolution and the Shield at the pay-per-view. Oh, I'm sorry, special event. We are not allowed to use pay-per-view anymore. We will be talking pay-per-view later in the program, though, with someone else, and it's not the WWE. But that being said, Shield versus Evolution, okay, I guess so. I'm just not all that compelled by this. I guess I get where we're going. Eventually, this is supposed to lead to Roman Reigns versus Triple H. This is a way to get there, I suppose.
Well, it's a good sign for the Shield. I mean, they're really trying to push these guys as the number three baby faces in the company. They're never going to get over John Cena or Daniel Bryan, but having them against the trio of Orton, Hunter, Batista, I mean, that can only mean good things. And having the Evolution aspect back in the game, we don't have Ric Flair, which is kind of disappointing. Maybe we'll see him somewhere down the road, but Evolution versus the Shield at the special event, quote unquote, I'm actually looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, it should be all right, but then again, I think now it has to live up to Shield versus Wyatt's, and I don't know if it will.
Oh, that's definitely not going to be the case. I mean, Wyatt's versus Shield was on a completely different level because we've never seen anything like that before. It was two unbelievably over heel factions going to toe-to-toe. Evolution, we've been there, done that. It's just going to be used as a means to make the Shield look like a million bucks.
Yeah, and I think having it almost back-to-back with that showdown with the Shield and the Wyatts hurts it somewhat. But I get what they did with this card. Obviously, no Daniel Bryan. You had to put someone at the top of the show, and the Shield are obviously the people to do that with. I don't have any problem with that. The 11-on-3 Smoz match was just pointless. I didn't get that at all. The other main theme of this show was trying to rehabilitate the Intercontinental title for the 947th time with a number one contenders tournament. Did that get you excited, Chris Walder?
Well, the company has to do something with the mid-card, especially after WrestleMania when all of these part-time stars go elsewhere. But I like the idea of a tournament. The first-round matchups were really good. Bad News Barrett, excuse me, and Dolph Ziggler stole the show. They had a tremendous 10- or 15-minute matchup. And it looks like at the end of this, possibly the Swiss Superman, Cesaro, he might win this thing and go on to face Big E at Extreme Rules. But yeah, it brings some relevance back to the Intercontinental title, at least. If only they started doing that with the United States Championship. We'll see if we ever get to that point.
I think whoever wins this thing, and I think the winner of this tournament, sorry Big E, but I think they are going to become the Intercontinental Heavyweight Champion. I think their first goal should be to call out Dean Ambrose and unify those titles.
Oh yeah, definitely. The mid-card titles need to be unified at some point. There's no point having two of them. Dean Ambrose doesn't even defend it anymore, and who knows how long we would have gone with Big E not defending it had we not had this tournament.
Yeah, and I mean, even if the person that challenges Dean Ambrose doesn't win, and Ambrose wins the IC title, I'm fine with that, but I think we have to get one belt that's strong, and that belt, the WWE is always going to choose their belt over the belt that isn't theirs, and that happens to be the Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship, not the U.S. title, which was an old WCW NWA title, and the WWE isn't going to put that over their own title because that's not what they do. And coming up actually in the blog, we are going to have, I think tomorrow, a list of the top 10 best Intercontinental Champions of all time. A tough list to do. And you've gotten a preview of that list. Not easy stuff, Chris Walder, when you go back through the glorious history of the Intercontinental title, which does not include the last 5 to 10 years.
Absolutely. And you brought this list up to me on social media. I helped you look it over and to see what I would throw in there. But for the most part, it's a great list, and I hope everyone checks it out when it goes up on the site.
They will check it out because people love lists. That's what I learned from last week, is one of the best articles we've ever done. 10 things I thought would happen before WrestleMania 31 went bonkers. Everyone loves lists. Everyone loves predictions. These are things I have learned. Although, much the same from the other world we come from in professional sports, NBA playoffs kicking off, and everyone wants to have predictions for the playoffs. So, wrestling fans, not so much different from actual pro sports fans. They like predictions, too.
That's why all of these other sites like Bleacher Report and WhatAculture.com, it's always lists, and they always draw big views. But, yes, I hope everyone checks out the top 10 Intercontinental Champions of all time, and let us know if you agree with James' choices.
And if not, you know, make your own list. It's fine with me. I have no problem with that. What else from Raw? It seems like it was ages ago. I guess the one other thing that stood out for a lot of people, a strange interaction with Damian Sandow in the Big Show, in which Sandow cuts this long promo that was, I don't know, and then gets knocked out with one punch. Some people are saying, well, Sandow isn't getting buried because he got all that time to talk. Other people are saying, well, he got buried. He got dropped with one punch. I don't know what to make of what that was for Damian Sandow. I just know he's in a really bad place right now.
Well, he was buried. I'm not looking too much into it as far as, like you said, oh, he got some mic time and he was able to interact with the audience, and that could only mean good things. Well, we thought that when Sandow came out for the anniversary show and he interacted with D-Generation X, and look how that wound up. And Big Show punches him in the face, leaves, gets his paycheck. I mean, it was so pointless. That probably would have gone to a Daniel Bryan match or a Daniel Bryan promo at the very least. But, I mean, so we don't gloss over it. Something else kind of big happened on Raw, the interaction between Stephanie McMahon and the big red monster, Kane.
Oh, yes, Kane's back for the 10 millionth time. And Stephanie got to do the impression of her dad, which is getting better. I mean, there's no question. Stephanie is channeling her inner Vince better and better as we go along. I often wonder here, we're going way off base here, but you know, when her three daughters like act up, is that the voice that she yells at them with? Is it like that inner Vince voice?
Oh, bless their hearts. I hope that's not the case. That would traumatize them for life.
I'm thinking, in all seriousness, Triple H is the baby face in that whole family dynamic. I think those girls, when trouble happens, they go to dad, not mom.
Oh, probably, yeah. That's probably how things go. Daddy's little girls, of course.
Indeed. That being said, Triple H is certainly in the mix now, wrestling for the next little while with this reemergence of Evolution. And it's interesting to see because we haven't seen an extended run from Triple H in quite some time. But if we're reading the tea leaves right, we're going to see a lot of Triple H in the ring for the next few months, it would seem, because we're going to have this match with Evolution and the Shield. And then eventually we're going to get to a Roman Reigns Triple H match. So it looks like, you know, we could be seeing the game as an in-ring competitor a lot more than we have in the past little while.
And give credit where credit is due, because this is a man that juggles like 1,001 jobs at once. And the fact that he's coming back to the ring and competing on a regular basis again, helping put over some of the young guys. And I'm so sick of all of these stories about how Triple H pulls out the shovel and buries all of these young superstars who are trying to get their shot in the company. I don't buy that for a second. He's really starting to show his knowledge of the business and who needs to go over at the appropriate times. We saw that at WrestleMania with Daniel Bryan, and hopefully it's going to be the case for the Shield and Roman Reigns, especially at SummerSlam.
And you only need to look at the work he's done down in NXT in Florida with Full Sail, with that program as a whole, the developmental center, which we're going to hear about. We have a guest on the program this week. I forgot to mention off the top, an independent wrestler from right here in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Ethan Page will join us, and I got his perspective as an independent wrestler, what he thinks about the WWE developmental system, and he's a big fan of it as a guy who's coming up and looking to get into the business. And you know, no one I have heard with a dissenting word to say about the WWE Performance Center and their whole developmental system, and that is all Paul Levesque, Triple H.
And we're already seeing it pay dividends. I mean, the last couple of weeks we're seeing these promos and vignettes and all of these debuts of these NXT superstars, and these are the guys that we're going to be watching in the ring for the next 5 to 10 years, and like you said, this is all Triple H.
And let's face it, not everything has worked out. I mean, I don't think Emma has been a tremendous success. Clearly, Xavier Woods has not been. But they're throwing darts at the dartboard, and we're seeing all these people from NXT getting their chances. And I like it. And I also like how we've kind of done the reverse with a couple people. We saw Brodus Clay. We mentioned this last week on the program. Brodus Clay is now on NXT, because they really don't have anything for him on the main roster, and maybe this is a chance to reform Brodus Clay, and maybe he gets kind of the Husky Harris to Bray Wyatt treatment down at NXT, which I don't think would do him any damage at all. I think it would be a positive, as opposed to him just dying off on the main roster. He got to wrestle a match with Adrian Neville this week on NXT. Didn't look terrible. Lost by countout. Feud continues, so it looks like Brodus Clay is going to be a part of things down on NXT. And also for Neville, a chance to work with a bigger guy, which is something I'm sure the WWE is interested in before they go moving him up to any main roster, how he would do in a situation against the bigger competitor.
And I'm a big Adrian Neville mark, but obviously, they can't bring all of these guys up at once, but hopefully in the next coming months, we see the debut of Adrian Neville. He's got a good build to him, which I think will help his push when he does come to the WWE. He's not like Evan Bourne, who we haven't seen on television for a while because of his injuries. He's very lanky and very skinny. I hope Neville gets his chance, but, I mean, like we said, with Woods and Emma and now Adam Rose and Bo Dallas, they're going to get their time in the spotlight, but Neville's will come soon.
Yeah, well, the problem with Neville is, and here's the thing, he's a guy who, and they've been trying to get him to talk on the microphone in NXT, bless them, because that's the point of NXT, but I'm sorry, this guy can't cut a promo. He stinks. He's terrible. I don't think it's going to get any better anytime soon. And then the problem becomes, okay, well, then he needs a manager. Well, when you have a manager, especially in a world where managers are few and far between nowadays, generally speaking, that means you're a heel. But his moveset would certainly suggest he is not a heel, and there is the problem for Adrian Neville on the main roster. How do you bring him out, have a manager for him so he doesn't have to talk, and yet still be a babyface?
Well, maybe you don't have him talk at all. Maybe you just put him over with the way he does compete in the ring, with his 360 splashes and his Red Arrow finisher from the top rope. I mean, keep the mic away from him as much as he possibly can. I mean, I agree with you. He's not that strong on the mic, but there's a lot of guys in the main event scene right now that aren't particularly good with their microphone techniques. And I think of someone like Roman Reigns, who still has a long ways to go, but he has the look and the natural charisma to make him a main event star. I don't think Neville's going to get to that spot right away, but yeah, I like the idea of having a manager, and who knows? I mean, this is a long shot because he's British. Maybe he joins the Zeb Coulter camp and becomes a real American down the road.
Or, you know, maybe you could pair him off with your boy Bad News Barrett, and they could be a heel tag team.
That would be nice. Or maybe even to continue with the British theme here, maybe William Regal. Who knows?
William Regal would make an awesome manager for him. I would love to see William Regal get a role on the main roster. I'd much rather see it in the commentary booth than as a manager. But hey, Bobby Heenan used to balance those two things for a long time in the old WWE. I'm sure William Regal could do the same and manage a few guys as well. But yeah, William Regal, we need more of this guy. He was doing the announcing on NXT again this week, and boy, it seems like every week that he is on commentary, it's like an extra treat when you're watching the NXT show.
Well, his passion comes out in his commentary. He clearly loves what he's doing right now, and he's not going to be an active in-ring competitor, which he was so good. I mean, looking back at some of his former matches, and if you have the WWE Network, be sure to keep an eye out for any former William Regal encounters. But, yeah, I'm actually growing on this idea of pairing him off with Neville, but they could also bring him onto the commentary team. I mean, I'm starting to get a little bit tired of John Bradshaw Layfield's act. Replace him with Regal already. Let's do this thing.
I'm tired of everybody. I'm tired of Cole. I'm tired of JBL. I'm tired of King. That was one of my things that I said would change before WrestleMania 31. The announce team needs a major kick in the rear, so to speak. And I think there's no question that. But we have been talking about young talents and the WWE's future, and even taking that to the next level, independent wrestling is around here getting pretty good in this area. You should go check out some of the shows, Smash Wrestling in Toronto, Alpha One Wrestling here in Hamilton. We'll be running a show after Global Wars. My guest that I am going to be talking to, Ethan Page, will be part of that show, and we talk about that. Also talk about, he is going to be part of a card that is actually probably already taking place or is about to take place tonight, called Future of Honor. We are going to get into Ring of Honor after the interview, because a big week for them. But Future of Honor basically is kind of their way of making their own kind of NXT brand. Interesting thing, they've started just one of many things that ROH is up to, and you know, a lot of guys have that dream of becoming wrestlers, but it's a tough go. But you got to respect these guys that are trying to bust their butt and do it.
It's a good sign for Ring of Honor. They're really coming on, and like you always bring up, there's a really strong possibility that at the end of 2014, that might be the number two wrestling company in North America. If it hasn't, I mean, let's face it, it might not take even that long before it comes to that.
And Ethan Page, talking with me, is one of the guys who hopes to be a part of that company. Here we are on the IWC podcast, part of the Condo on the Moon. And we've talked to a lot of great wrestling journalists over the last few weeks. But today, we have an actual professional wrestler on the program. Ethan Page joins us, an independent wrestler from around the area, from my hometown, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. So it's great to have another Hamiltonian on the program.
Awesome. I totally forgot that you're from Hamilton. Now I'm even more excited to do this interview.
Yeah, well, you see, that's the thing. I've covered the Toronto Raptors for years, and everyone always tries to peg me from Toronto. And I'm sure probably wrestling, you probably get a lot of that too.
Everything that I do in the States, they always want to announce me from Toronto because it's the most well-known city. And I've been, like, anal about making sure that they announce me from Hamilton.
In the same way. It must be some kind of thing about being from Hamilton. We're stubborn about it. No, don't, like, we're not from that place. We're from this place. So.
I think it's because people talk so much trash about Hamilton and living here. Like, I've lived in Toronto as well, and I can honestly say that I enjoy life here way better than in Toronto. So, like, I take a little bit of pride in representing it because it has such a bad reputation.
And you know what, too, I spent about, like, a month living in Toronto, and I share the feeling. I love going to Toronto, though. Like, I'm a big fan of, like, hanging out in the city when I get to cover the Raptors and all that. But I'm just as happy to come home because it's tough there. But you were in the Toronto area this weekend and for a great cause. And just talk about that story. I had learned about it through the law, but you're wrestling in a match with Michael Elgin from Ring of Honor and Ashley Six, who's a wrestler who had a bout with cancer, and this was his big return match. That had to feel good to just be a part of something like that.
Yeah, it was awesome to be a part of the show. It was even more awesome that I was handpicked to be one of the opponents in Ashley Six's re-debut.
Yeah, and just, you know, that kind of a comeback story, and then you're raising money for cancer. The money from that went to cancer research as well, didn't it not?
Yep, it was a charity event.
Yeah, so that's a great thing, and it's just so nice to have a positive story like that. I mean, the big story in wrestling this week, and probably will go on for a while, the death of the Ultimate Warrior. I don't think wrestling has enough of the positive stories to gravitate to, and this was one that, you know, on an independent level, but still a tremendous story and something that, you know, is uplifting for people.
Yeah, and leading up to the event, I know Ashley Six was doing, like, radio interviews and, like, print interviews and, like, podcasting. Like, just the amount of support that he had was, like, greater than any local wrestling show because of the story, and it's a great story. And, like, at the end of the show, everyone's speeches and, like, the heartwarming moments, it was definitely something that I'll cherish in my wrestling career until I retire, for sure.
One of the guys from Live Audio Wrestling was there, and I actually had one of them on last week talking to them, and they said what, you know, just an emotional and great event it was to be at and be a part of. And I guess that takes me to where this all starts for me. I was a guy who, honestly, I'm the typical, I watch WWE, I've always watched it since I was a kid, but I never was really gravitating to, like, independent wrestling or any of that, but I stumbled upon Kevin Steen, basically, and I really got to like him, and he does such a great job of making all the promotions he works in come off so well. I think he does a great job at that. And we were chatting before we started the conversation, a guy like Colt Cabana's also done a lot for the whole indie scene, and then a guy who you're well familiar with, Michael Elgin, has really been doing well of late. What is it that you can say to people that haven't given indie wrestling a try to give it a try?
It's way more intimate, and I don't know, I feel like the fans can feel the appreciation from the performers. you're going to get a, it's way easier to meet the performers, like, at intermission. They're selling their merchandise, and they're there for the fans. So, like, you can go to a WWE show, but when you buy Sheamus' t-shirt, Sheamus isn't sitting there selling it to you for $20 and going to shake your hand and take a photo and talk to you about what he did this past weekend. Or it's just like a completely different atmosphere, and it's not what you see on TV too. So give it a shot. If you see a poster for a local show, you know what, it might be terrible because I've been on some terrible shows, but give it a shot because you might find a hidden gem.
Yeah, because one of the things that with Kevin, I got to know his work in ROH, but he also started the Weekend Escapades thing. And you get to see him traveling around, and I just think it really gives you, it made me feel anyway, more like I wanted to be a part of that. And I'm actually going to be heading down next month. First time I'll be going to an ROH show, and then you're going to be working on a show in Hamilton the next day, and I'm going to try and make it for that too with Alpha One Wrestling here in Hamilton, which honestly, I feel bad in saying it, but I had no idea existed.
Right, which blows my mind because in the city of Hamilton, if pro wrestling is brought up, people usually know and love Alpha One. It had a TV show on Cable 14. It's always had crazy, fun, big crowds. So if you get a chance, I would definitely check it out.
Yeah, no, because it's like, it's one of those things that I never realized. I had a friend who tried wrestling, and I knew he was wrestling around the era. I didn't realize there was a promotion right here in Hamilton. And I think for a lot of people, that's probably true. There's probably a promotion within, like, spitting distance of you that you can go check out pro wrestling, going back to what we were saying about, you know, hey, go give it a shot. Coming up for you this weekend, I saw this Future of Honor. Can you explain that to me? Is that something new for Ring of Honor?
Yeah, it's kind of like I don't want to say tryout, but it's like, hey, we like these guys, we see potential in them, so before we put them on the main roster, let's showcase them and give them a chance to impress not just Ring of Honor, but the Ring of Honor fans.
Is it kind of like the Ring of Honor's answer to NXT?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, that's what I looked at it. And this is something brand new, right? Because I have never seen it before, so I just want to make sure I'm right.
Yeah, it's the first ever Future of Honor show.
Yeah, because they've done in the past, they have that thing where they have their top star tournament that they do every year. They've had that one. Matt Taven won it a couple years ago, and the big guy with the beard, who I can't remember his name at the moment, he won this year. So it's interesting. And one of the things, too, being an independent wrestler, what do you think of all that's gone on with the WWE, with their performance center and all of that? Because people who cover wrestling, they have all their thoughts about it, but I'm interested in someone who is an independent wrestler and what you think of that whole setup.
I think it's awesome. It's way bigger, which means they can, like, host way more talent. So they can have up to, like, 100 guys under contract, which means more opportunity for guys to make a living at what they love to do. So, like, I don't see any issues with it whatsoever.
And, you know, it seems like, at least if you're going in a direction, when you look at where the WWE is at right now, you're probably heading in the right direction, heading in the direction of ROH, because, my oh my, you look at the WWE roster, there's a lot of former ROH talent on it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think there's been a big change in what's acceptable as a pro wrestler, and, like, all the guys are in great shape, all the guys are athletic, all the guys are talented, they all have charisma, they all have the it factor, but I guess back in the day they might not have been big enough or tall enough, and now it's not that they're not focusing on that, because I still hear about football players and models and weightlifters getting signed to contracts, but I think that they're more interested in guys who have a connection with the audience instead of guys who have huge biceps.
Yeah, well, just this week they announced Sean Merriman, the former San Diego Charger, they signed.
Yeah, exactly. And that's going to happen from now until the end of WWE, because at the end of the day, like, they have to put on a show. And like, when I went for my first WWE tryout, they said that they compared WWE to like a circus, so they have to have every act. That's why they have guys like Kali all the way down to guys like Hornswoggle, and guys that can do flips, and guys that are the best pro wrestlers, guys that are the best on the mic, comedians, everything. So they're going to sign juiced up football players for sure.
And you know that, well, juiced up, no, they have their wellness policy. That doesn't happen.
Yeah, right.
We can't have that. But one guy who I don't think he's juiced up at all. I think he just is a workout fiend. We mentioned him earlier, but you had tweeted earlier this week that you were going to work out with Michael Elgin. I assume, like, work out in the gym. That must be one heck of an experience, because that guy, I imagine, can do some things in a weight room.
He is a friggin' machine in the weight room. Like, that man lifts weights. Like, he's not a human being. I'll just leave it at that.
Well, you hear about the stories about Antonio Cesaro on the WWE level, but I think Michael Elgin, that would be an interesting contest in the weight room, I think.
I think Michael Elgin could throw weights with any pro wrestler, whether it's in the top or the bottom. Like, this guy is unreal.
You've wrestled him a bunch of times, so I assume you've taken that move where you're up in that suplex and you're up there for quite a long time. How much blood rushes to your head when you're taking a move like that?
A lot. I took it this Sunday. It made me dizzy.
It takes a while to recover from something like that. I remember one of the first times I got a tweet back from a wrestler was from Michael Elgin, because I tweeted Ryback had done that move on like a Raw, and I joked and I said, oh, he's trying to steal Michael Elgin's gimmick, and I got a tweet back for that, so that was pretty cool. But anyway, things seem to be going well for you, and with your character, it is all ego, Ethan Page. So explain to me who this guy is for people that haven't seen you before.
I don't know. The name's pretty straightforward. I believe in myself enough that I don't mind telling people that I have an ego. And I've accomplished things that obviously make me have a chip on my shoulder. Like, I've held titles in so many states and so many provinces and cities and towns. And I've wrestled with the best wrestlers in the world. So I've beat some of the best wrestlers in the world, actually. So I'm all ego. It's all about Ethan Page all the time.
There you go. And in some ways, it has to be that way in wrestling, right?
Yeah, I think everyone is all ego, except I'm just the only one that has big enough balls to admit it.
Yeah, but one of the things I find fascinating still, beyond all of that, there seems to be a great camaraderie between guys on the independent scene. They seem to really get along, and that's interesting, seeing as you're all probably fighting to get ahead and all that. And you get that kind of in basketball, like in the developmental leagues, and sometimes you don't see that chemistry or guys getting along as well as wrestlers seem to do.
I think it has to do with the fact that no one ever wants to travel alone. Like, you start off and no one's making any money, so the more people you load in a car, the cheaper it is for you to get exposure and make it where you need to make it. So there's always going to be that camaraderie. Plus, wrestling is something that's like constantly attacked and picked apart, so you're part of like a brotherhood. You're going against the grain, but you're doing it together. Whether you're against each other trying to get the top spot or the main event or more money, at the end of the day, everyone's gonna group together to tell that one guy that's saying, oh, what you do is fake.
Yeah, that there's still those people out there, isn't there?
Oh yeah.
It's like, it's fake, it's this, it's that. But I was talking a couple weeks ago, I was talking with Jimmy Corderas, who used to referee in the WWE and referees some independent shows every once in a while too, I think. But yep. I was saying to him, you know, coming from the world of pro basketball, we talk in pro basketball, oh, when the Raptors play a back-to-back, oh my God, you know, that second night, for wrestlers, they just much laugh at that. A typical weekend for a wrestler, you probably, if you're booked, you want to wrestle like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and you're traveling and you're not on a nice plane and all of that. And I think that's something, going back to something we touched on earlier, that's something that a Kevin Steen has brought to light, a Colt Cabana has brought to light with his Wrestling Road Diaries, and it kind of shows you that side of the business. And it's I have so much respect for wrestlers in the sense of you're doing something that both you're trying to be entertaining, but it takes a lot of athleticism to do as well.
Yeah, and a lot of patience and, like, understanding and dedication, because, like Colt Cabana or Kevin Steen, that's like top tier indie, and you see how rough they have it at times. So, like, to be on that level, and that's like a level that I'm trying to achieve, and it's still rough for them. Like, people have to take that into consideration and understand like how much we're dedicating our lives to this.
Yeah, and it, one of the things I wrote about in an article a while ago, I was kind of processing this whole transfer from doing basketball to doing wrestling and kind of doing both. And I was thinking about it. When you look at a league like the NBA, for example, or the NFL, or, you know, any of the major sports, the amount of jobs there are in those sports compared to wrestling, it's not even close at the top level.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, like, you've got, like, what, 550 guys in the NFL. How many guys are in the WWE? What, we got 7,500 in developmental, and then whatever's on the WWE roster,
which is like 25-30.
Yeah, so it's tough sledding, and it's hard, and, you know, everyone has the dream, but you and other people like you are the ones that are out there trying to make it happen, and that on its own should be respected, I think.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
No, it's true, because, I mean, I think everybody has kind of had, if you've been a fan of wrestling, at some point everyone's had that moment where they say, oh, I want to do this. I mean, I was a kid that used to get up on my ladder, do the Randy Savage elbow, nearly kill myself, probably trying to balance, and at my age, probably shouldn't have been doing that. But I never had that next thought of, oh, I want to really do this. I just left it at that. A lot of people, you know, have had those moments, and they don't follow through. For the people that do, I got all the respect in the world.
True, man. It's very true. It's not something you pick up and start doing and succeed in. I guess you're a friggin' football player.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something that you can fall into very easily. There's not too many careers where you could just, you know, all of a sudden, oh, yeah, I think I'll go try and be a wrestler. It's like, sometimes, too, I think, and if I have any beef with indie wrestling, this would be it. I think sometimes indie wrestling, oh, yeah, I could do commentary. That's no problem. And I'm like, someone who's thinking media, I listen to some of these people, and I'm like, really? Like, come on, it's tough. It's not easy.
No, I agree with you.
No, and some people are good at it, but some people, they just like, and then it's like, really, dude? Like, really? I don't know. But that's my beef. That's my beef. But I'm not big and tough enough to, like, go up against a wrestler and say, hey, you know what? You suck. You're terrible on commentary. Get out of my way. Although, you know, maybe I could manage someone. Maybe that's my way to get in.
When I first started, I did commentary and backstage interviews, and it was just my way of, like, trying to be a part of the show, and eventually one thing led to another, and I started training. But, yeah, it's funny that you said that.
No, it is, because, I mean, I think that's the thing, too. Like I think people don't have a lot of respect for certain things, and that's one of them. I think they think, oh, yeah, anyone could do commentary, anyone can go interview people. It's a skill. Like, it's not easy.
Yeah, it's true.
So, anyway, that is about all I have for you, other than the fact I just think you do a miraculous job on Twitter. I think you are very funny, so you should, above all else, let people know where to follow you on Twitter, because I think you're a fantastic follow and a very funny guy.
Thanks, man. It's Twitter's at EthanPage89, and like you were saying earlier, like, I love interacting with fans. I'll do Q&As from time to time, so don't be shy. If you want to ask me anything, just shoot me a tweet, and I'll more than likely reply.
And even the most absurd things I've shot at you, and you've had something funny and witty to come back with. And also, you'll be wrestling down in the States. Good luck with that, with the Future of Honor. That's what it's called, right?
Yep.
Good luck with that, and you'll be back home wrestling here on, is it Sunday?
Yeah, Sunday in Hamilton for Steel City Pro. If you check out my YouTube page, it's youtube.com/, let me check on the link right now because I'm terrible at this. Yeah, I think it's youtube.com/ Canadian Monster Mafia.
Okay, we'll get it in there and a link on when we put up the podcast as well. And then one last plug for you, May the 11th, after Global Wars, the big ROH show, you have a big show going on for Alpha One Wrestling, and that will feature a couple of the guys we were talking about. Kevin Steen, Michael Elgin will be part of that show. You yourself will be a part of that show.
Yep.
Give fans a taste of what that show is going to be like.
Oh, it's going to be probably the biggest show that's ever happened in Hamilton. It's going to have Tommy Dreamer as well, Sleazius Sparks from Ring of Honor, Jimmy Jacobs from Ring of Honor. We always have surprises and like craziness happening. So you have big title matches. Josh Alexander's back from Calgary. He's in a title match as well. The whole card is just stacked from top to bottom. And like Alpha One does one thing, and that's, whether it's local talent or not, everyone that's on the card is amazing, and they'll only use the best of the best. So check that out, alpha-onewrestling.com. And, yeah, come out and check it out. If you travel for Ring of Honor in Toronto, stay in town and see Alpha One.
Yeah, I'm going down to check out Global Wars, and I'm going to try and make it down for the Hamilton show, doing the Kevin Steen double dip along with Michael Elgin as well, and a number of the people from ROH, and it should be fun, because I'm very excited to see that show in Toronto, and you guys have a nice little piggyback to that, I think, with a great show the next day. I can live like a wrestler other than taking the bumps. Like, I can make two towns and see how that all works out for me. A nice young man, Ethan Page, he will be wrestling May the 11th at Alpha One Wrestling. Also, this Sunday here in Hamilton, wrestling for Steel City Wrestling. If you're hearing this before Sunday and you got a chance, go check it out. Great guy trying to make his way into Ring of Honor. And it was a big week for Ring of Honor. Huge announcement for them. Ring of Honor is coming to pay-per-view. Not pay-per-view, the real pay-per-view. And boy, oh boy, I don't care what anyone in that company says. This is, hey, TNA, we're coming for you.
Oh, yeah, TNA needs to be looking over their shoulder. The pay-per-view is a big step in the right direction for Ring of Honor. And I'm glad they're stopping with this, the iPay-per-view system, because that was such a pain in the butt. It was a terrible signals, terrible feeds, but pay-per-view, I mean, I hope it works out. This could be what pushes them over the top.
And the price point, pretty good. It's going to be about $24 American. No word on if this will be up here in Canada for this event. Best in the World, we should mention, is the event. June 22nd will be live on pay-per-view all throughout the United States on all the major carriers, including Dish Network, that of course bailed on the WWE. So big news for ROH. They are keeping the iPay-per-views going, though. They're going to do it now with Ustream, and this is a smart idea, I think, for the card. I am going to Global Wars here in Toronto. If you want tickets, guess what, they're all gone, I think. And New York City the next week, again, sold out. ROH doing some things right. They're selling out these shows. But both of those will be on iPay-per-view on Ustream, and I think that'll be a good test to see where ROH is at, both in terms of an audience they can possibly draw, and it gives you the alternative that obviously is going away for the WWE. The WWE, you're watching on the network and that's it. ROH actually is going to have both, it looks like, where you can watch both via the internet, or you can watch on your traditional pay-per-view.
$24 is such a steal. Over the last couple of days, I've been YouTubing a lot of their matches, and some of these young guys, their matches are unbelievable. I'm starting to grow on Michael Elgin, and you're a big Kevin Steen. And a lot of these former big-name stars that the company used to have are returning, AJ Styles, Chris Hero. So, yeah, definitely, if you can throw down $24 for this thing, I suggest you do it, because you're going to get hours of beautiful in-ring action, and I'm certainly going to be one of those people.
And kicking back to our interview, as Ethan Page said, Michael Elgin is not human. And there is something to that. And he does that suplex where he holds people up in the air for what seems like forever. He even did that move to Kevin Steen at Supercard of Honor on the outside and held him for like 14 seconds. Kevin Steen has been getting in better shape and looks great, but still a big guy, and held him up there for like the 14 count on the outside. Michael Elgin, we talk about Cesaro's strength in WWE. Michael Elgin is right up there with him and probably one of the strongest guys in the wrestling business right now today.
And I'm going to ask you this quick. It's something that's always been in the back of my mind, and I almost kind of believe it. Do you think Ring of Honor, and I hope all of the success in the world for these guys, but is it starting to look like Ring of Honor is kind of a second NXT developmental, like they're a feeding ground for World Wrestling Entertainment?
I think absolutely. That, like, if you're a young wrestler right now, where do you want to be? Do you want to be where, say, Ethan Carter III is right now, where he's a big player on TNA, but he's already bombed out with WWE and probably isn't going back there? Or do you want to be a young guy that works your way through ROH and can make not as good a living probably financially, but definitely a decent one, and then have that shot still at WWE? Because obviously WWE isn't turned off by the fact people were in ROH. There's guys in ROH that are getting tryouts there all the time down at the Performance Center. It's not like they're against it. And look at their roster. I mean, a lot of their top stars are former ROH competitors.
Daniel Bryan, Cesaro, Seth Rollins, and he who shall not be named, CM Punk, all former Ring of Honor guys. And one of the few exceptions, we saw obviously Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards. They had their tryout match in NXT that didn't turn out so well for them, and now they're kind of just henchmen for MVP and TNA and doing their thing with the bromance. But yeah, it's a good sign for some of these smaller guys in Ring of Honor who can look at some of their peers in WWE that are near the top of the card and say, hey, maybe I can be there someday.
And even look down at NXT now. You got Sami Zayn on the verge of being part of this roster. Former ROH competitor and a guy who wrestles at PWG as well. Drake Younger has been signed to the WWE. So, I mean, it just seems that it's going on, and, you know, ROH seems to be the hot company of 2014. I mean, WWE is always going to be number one, but boy, oh boy, when you contrast TNA and ROH, two companies that have had completely reverse years, and perception is the reality. I mean, whether TNA has more money behind it or not, whether they are more financially stable or not, that's really not the issue. The perception in the wrestling business right now is ROH is doing a better job at what they're doing than what TNA is doing, and TNA has to worry about their television, where ROH doesn't have as good a television, but they're owned by a television distribution company, so they're going to have it. Where does TNA stay on Spike TV? We don't know. They haven't renewed their contract. It's coming up, and the WWE has their contract up in the air. They've been on Spike TV before. If the WWE went back to Spike and Viacom, it's over. TNA's done. What happens? I mean, they have to basically turn out the lights.
Unless they just become like a web-only series. But that's
which not, that's... they've done for a period of time.
TNA did
do that. But I think, given the state of this company, I think that would be the death blow. I think that would be it. that would be close the doors. And then, I mean, then we've got this crazy thing with Jeff Jarrett. I don't think we brought this up on the program yet, but what do you think of this wacky proposition of Jeff Jarrett and Global Force Wrestling?
Well, good for him, I guess, starting this thing up. I still kind of want to see his roster and who he plans on coming in. He posts a lot of pictures on Twitter and Instagram of him and his wife, Karen, posing with all of these superstars with the Global Force hashtag on them, but that doesn't imply that they're with the company. I mean, I think he had one with Jay Lethal. Kevin Nash posed for a picture, and it said Global Force Wrestling. Odds are they might not be in it. I think AJ Styles even had one, too. But, yeah, I still want more details about this thing, where they're going to be on television, what their setup is going to look like. But, yeah, I mean, it's more and more looking like it's a death toll for TNA with Ring of Honor coming on, and now Jarrett starting Global Force. It's not looking good.
It's not looking good for TNA, but I don't know how good it's looking for Jeff Jarrett either. I mean, those pictures that you mentioned, Jay Lethal was absolutely furious about that because he obviously is still under contract to ROH. He has just taken their world television title and done a heel turn, and I think a magnificent job at their supercard down in New Orleans. I thought wrestled a great match with Tommaso Ciampa in a 2 out of 3 falls match. He was not happy about that, and he caught a lot of Jeff Jarrett kind of played some dirty pool with those pictures. Hey, want to have a picture? And then it's up on a website, and now all of a sudden people are questioning, well, what the heck are you doing posing for pictures for some other company that hasn't even started yet? Like, what's up with that?
Well, it obviously drew some interest, but yeah, I mean, if these guys haven't committed to the company, and like you said, with Jay Lethal, he's still under contract to Ring of Honor, that was kind of a low blow. And there was even a story that came out during the week that Jeff Jarrett got into a altercation with Ian Rotten's son, who's a promoter for a little indie wrestling company, and that doesn't look good on Jarrett either.
No, I mean Jarrett, I get what he's trying to do, and I mean, they have paired up with some guy who's huge in reality TV, and they're going to build a reality show around all of this. But Jeff Jarrett, I mean, you know, he's the guy who started TNA, and he kept it going by hook, by crook. But, you know, look at the state of TNA and the history of it. Really, why am I to believe that Global Force Wrestling will be any better than what TNA was, which was a company that, yes, survived, but really never thrived at any point in their history, with maybe one exception, that time that Kurt Angle came in, they paired him off with Samoa Joe. I thought TNA was maybe knocking on the door of doing something significant. But for the most part, it's been a company where guys have been able to work, it's been on television, but it's never really been a thriving promotion.
And if Global Force Wrestling wants any chance to be a major player, I think they need to have someone with a solid wrestling background and a mind for the business be in control. I mean, with all due respect to Jeff Jarrett, he did help put TNA on the map early, but like you said, the whole surviving but not thriving thing. I would love to see, and this is not going to happen, I don't want to put this into anyone's head, but Jim Ross, I mean, if he was a part of Global Force Wrestling, I would have a little bit of hope. And, I mean, before he returned to WWE, even a guy like Paul Heyman, but that's obviously not going to be the case. But I would want someone with that kind of background in charge.
Well, let's put it this way. Jim Ross is going to be at an ROH show on May the 10th. He's not anywhere near Jeff Jarrett or Global Force Wrestling or TNA for that matter. Main reason being, though, not saying that JR is going to be working for ROH or anything like that. He is doing his one-man show in Toronto on May the 9th. Get your information and Ticketmaster and all that for that show. It's selling quickly, as you would imagine, with Jim Ross being in Toronto. And we'll get all the details. I'll mention it on next week's podcast because I don't have it right here in front of me. But obviously, the reviews for his shows down in New Orleans were fantastic. And I would expect you'll get much of the same up here in Toronto. You know, probably a few surprises. I mean, there is a certain young lady that lives in Toronto, used to be a Divas champion. She might end up at that show. I'm just guessing, but it seems to make a lot of sense.
Who's that diva?
She runs a yoga studio.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah, she runs a yoga studio. She was just put in the WWE Hall of Fame. She was there to put in someone else this year, and actually she's going to be starting these one-man tours, but it's actually a two-person tour. Her and Lita are going to do one of these shows, too, in New Jersey coming up soon.
Oh, heaven. I love JR, but give me Trish Stratus and Lita any day of the week.
That would be a totally different show from the one that JR puts on, I would imagine. And the crowd might be totally different as well. So we shall see. But just to finish off the thoughts on ROH, I just think they're doing some tremendous business right now. I thought, if you haven't had a chance to catch their card from New Orleans that they held down there, just tremendous stuff. I thought it was a, you know, quality show that was presented as being a big deal, and it felt like a big deal. And I thought pretty much, with one exception, the angle they did with Matt Taven and Truth Martini kind of really bombed, and you almost wonder if that wasn't how that angle was supposed to go down, because it seemed like they were missing a wrestler that was supposed to fight Matt Taven. But other than that, I had no real problems with what they did on their program at Supercard of Honor. I think it was number 8. They used the Roman numerals, so I'm trying to think. Yeah, I think it was 8. But a great card from top to bottom. The main event, Ladder War, boy, oh boy, was that a bloody mess. I know a lot of people didn't like some parts of it because there was a lot of chair shots in it where they didn't actually do the head shots with the chairs because people frown on that, but they just chuck chairs at people's heads to get around that. not a laughing matter for some, but I mean, I thought it was a long-standing rivalry. You may not like all the violence. I mean, Jay Briscoe, at the beginning of this match, if you remember, and I'm not comparing Jay Briscoe to Stone Cold Steve Austin, but if you remember the Austin match where he turned heel against The Rock and he had the blood, that was Jay Briscoe in Supercard of Honor 8. He got bloody early in that match and bled throughout it, and wow. It was a nasty, nasty match. Lots of run-ins at the end. But Adam Cole retains his world title. We'll move on to Toronto to face Kevin Steen for the ROH title at Global Wars. Should be a fun match there. Two guys that work together in another promotion called PWG as part of Mount Rushmore. I expect nothing but an awesome match from that. And a great show up in Toronto as they get set for Global Wars. And I am working on getting Court Bauer to be a part of this program and be on the show, because Court obviously works as an advisor with ROH. And a lot of these changes that have been going for ROH, coincidentally or not, have happened since Court Bauer has been a part of ROH. And you can take that for what it's worth.
We give a lot of love to Ring of Honor on this show. Hopefully someone from the company is listening. Maybe me and you can become their official podcast one day.
Well, they have Mike and Maria in Wonderland, so I think we're in trouble. I don't know if we're as good as Mike Bennett and Maria Kanellis, but, you know, they're welcome to come on our program. I love their podcast, so they are welcome to come on here. But, no, I just think it's important because I think a lot of people have had this on-again, off-again relationship with ROH, and the fact that their product really, for me, is popping right now, and it speaks to me as an older fan, because the main thing about that company that I like, and I've mentioned it on this podcast before, this is a company that is focused around their world title. Adam Cole is the most important guy in Ring of Honor right now, and it's for one simple reason. Not that he's a great wrestler, not that he's a great talent. It's that he has that strap of gold around his waist, and the whole entire program is built around that.
Which is the right thing to do. I mean, if you're going to have your company be based around the wrestling and pure wrestling, you want your world heavyweight champion to look like the man, and that's what Ring of Honor does really well. And it's a shame that, I mean, I look at TNA mostly. The WWE has come around with that, having their two world championships put together, and now Daniel Bryan is in that spot. But, I mean, I hate to bring up TNA all the time, but they've rarely made their world champion look like the guy in the company. And kudos to Ring of Honor, because Adam Cole is really, he lives up to the billing and he lives up to the hype. And the thing with ROH is when they have their world champion, their reigns last quite a bit, don't they?
They're usually long, significant title reigns that mean something. And even if they're short, the matches that they have are epic encounters when they battle for that ROH world title. You don't get a soft ROH world title match. It just doesn't happen. You don't get the old Hulk Hogan brother big boot leg drop title match when you see an ROH title match. It doesn't happen.
And I actually thought of this, we're NBA guys, this Kenny Smith quote from when he used to do one of the slam dunk contests. It fits well with Ring of Honor. You don't need the names, you need the game. And that's what's so great about this company, is that they don't really have these mainstream stars. I mean, you can look at, you know, maybe the Matt Hardys or the AJ Styles of the world and Maria Kanellis, and people know who they are. But their product is so good, and it's so well-rounded with these young up-and-comers, guys who can really work in the ring, that TNA should take notes, because they put so much money into these old-timer guys like they did with Hulk Hogan, and, you know, Kurt Angle is nearing the end of his run, and Sting is now out the door. But you just need guys who can work and get a reaction from the audience and put on good matches, and that's what ROH does.
We'll finish this topic up right with this point, and you brought it up, what TNA has done with their more established, quote, WWE stars that they have brought in, as opposed to what ROH does with theirs. You look at the people in this company that they do have. You mentioned them. Matt Hardy. Where is Matt Hardy positioned in this company? He is the mentor to the world champion Adam Cole. It is not about Matt Hardy. It is about Adam Cole. Not about Matt Hardy. Adam Cole. Matt Hardy may draw people to come watch the show that are Matt Hardy fans, but when you get to the show, it's about Adam Cole. Maria Kanellis, who many people know from WWE, Playboy, etc., when you see her on the program, it is not about her. It is about her fiancé, Michael Bennett, who she manages. And now, as an extension, because they've formed a little group, it is about Matt Hardy. It is about Adam Cole and Mike Bennett, because those four are kind of their own little posse now in ROH. But the point being, Maria is not the focus. She is merely there to attract people to come. But when you get there, the focus is not her, it's Michael Bennett.
And that's a major thing TNA did back in the day. I remember this interview that Paul Heyman did with Ariel Helwani, who's a UFC guy, and they talked about TNA in the past and what Heyman would do if he was booking that company. And he brought up the fact that during that time there was a best-of-five series between the Motor City Machine Guns and Beer Money. And he said, if I was running things, if I was running the show, I would put that as the main event, and I would have the entire two-hour show leading up to it just hyping that thing up insanely. But instead, what TNA did was they put an emphasis on, I think they had the former ECW guys coming in. They were doing a reunion show. And they also had two big factions. I think it was Immortal and Fortune, who were comprised of young guys. But the focal points of those groups were men who were in their 50s and 60s, which was Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair. And like what you said with ROH, Matt Hardy makes Adam Cole better because Matt Hardy has a following. But what TNA did was, instead of making Beer Money and AJ Styles and Bobby and you know, who else was in those groups? Like, I think Magnus was in there, and Desmond Wolfe. They were afterthoughts compared to Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan, which is what you can't do when you're trying to build a company.
It just doesn't work. And I mean, ROH has always, even going back to their history, when they brought people in, like, they used to bring a Mick Foley in every once in a while. They'd bring in a Bobby Heenan when he was healthy. They'd bring in all these legends, but they were always brought in a way as an attraction that would draw people in, but they were not the focus. A great angle with CM Punk when he was in ROH was Ricky Steamboat and him had heat, and Ricky Steamboat acted like as an authority figure and actually refereed one of CM Punk's championship matches in ROH. Always using the stars in the right way to draw the attention to your stars. And I think you'll see it. I don't know what they have planned for their pay-per-view on June the 22nd, but whatever ROH does, you can bet that they will bring attention to their stars on that show. That will be the focus. They may do a lot of tricks and other stuff promoting it, and they may be talking a heck of a lot about Matt Hardy, a heck of a lot about Maria Kanellis, and no, they will not be talking about CM Punk, because CM Punk's contract will not be up in time for this, because a lot of people were like, ooh, maybe that's where we see CM Punk.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen. He has 8 days left on his WWE deal. If it does, I mean, sky's the limit. ROH just hit home run. Because I think if he ended up on their pay-per-view, my God.
Oh, jeez. Not happening, but it's a nice thing to think about.
But it is something that, beyond this pay-per-view, it's always going to be out there.
Yeah, it's a possibility.
I mean, if you're ROH and you want to get this thing rolling, I think CM Punk is not opposed to taking a big check to do a one night for a company that he clearly still respects and loves. I mean, he made a big deal about ROH in his DVD, The Best in the World. He didn't have to do that. In fact, it probably was a headache for him to do that, but he did it. So, who knows? I mean, it's certainly something that's out there on the horizon. But the point is, whatever ROH does on that day, the focus of that pay-per-view will be whoever is their world champion at the time and the match that they are in. That will be the biggest thing that you will walk away from that pay-per-view talking about. Because that's the old school way to do wrestling. And they do it better than anyone, even better than the WWE at times, in my opinion.
I have complete faith in Ring of Honor that they're going to do the right thing for this pay-per-view, and they're going to put on one heck of a show. And if things go right, this may be what puts them on the map and gets a lot of fans that have been naysayers in the past getting back on the bandwagon with Ring of Honor. And I've certainly been one of those people who lost faith recently, and I lost interest in Ring of Honor, but things have been going well as of late, and my interest is slowly getting back. And like I said earlier, going on YouTube and watching back some of these matches and now knowing that they'll have this pay-per-view, it's a good sign for fans, and more wrestling, more great wrestling is always a good thing.
And we'll close out with the fact of, we talked about titles and title reigns and stuff like that. Boy, Daniel Bryan and Kane, really?
I don't have, you know what, I don't have a problem with this, considering, I mean, Triple H was probably the right man for the job. As soon as we saw that segment on Raw with The Shield and Batista and Orton and Kane, I thought that was a given for Extreme Rules, a six-man tag team match, but they obviously felt that there was more money in reuniting Evolution and putting them with The Shield. If it was Daniel Bryan versus Kane, and I mean Kane, the man with the damn black slacks and his silly haircut, and if it was that, I would be pooping all over this thing because I hate Kane like that. But having him put on his mask, and you can obviously go back to their days as Team Hell No, and you can build off some history there. This is going to be a one-time thing. we're not going to be seeing them go months having pay-per-view title defenses and whatnot. I like the idea of him going back to the big red machine, putting the mask, putting the long hair on again, making an Extreme Rules match, and this obviously means Daniel Bryan's going to hold the title because they're not going to put it on Kane, right?
We would hope not, but it is not exactly the most auspicious start to the Daniel Bryan reign as world champion, I will say that.
But I like the fact that it means that Daniel Bryan's going to hold onto the belt because so many people were worried. Are they going to? People even thought they were going to take the gold off of him the night after WrestleMania, and that didn't happen. I want Bryan to really get a chance to be the face of WWE, and it starts at Extreme Rules when he goes through an obstacle, someone who's been tormenting him for the past several months, not to the extent that Triple H and the Authority did, but. You know, Kane and Bryan, they go a long way back, and I'll wait and see. I want to see how this thing plays out.
I don't know. You're much more optimistic than me. I think this is a bit of a, really? I'm not exactly sure how Daniel Bryan's title reign. The point is, I mean, it's not just the fact that he wins. It's the fact that he gets significant wins. And I would counter with saying a win over Kane in 2014... is not as significant a win as it was for, say, Stone Cold Steve Austin back in 2001.
Hey, the man just beat Triple H, Batista, and Orton in one night in two separate matches at WrestleMania. Anything he was going to do at Extreme Rules and beyond, probably until SummerSlam when he defends against Brock Lesnar, was going to be just a complete downgrade. So, you know, who else are you going to throw in that spot?
Wow, you're putting carts before horses, aren't we? Aren't you? We're already getting Brock and Daniel Bryan at SummerSlam.
Isn't that the obvious path?
No, I think the obvious path is we get Cesaro and Brock at SummerSlam. But we have lots of time to talk about that.
We do.
We are out of time for this week's show. Thank you to Ethan Page for stopping by and talking about wrestling on the independent scene, as we said in that interview. You know what, there's probably an independent show right in your neck of the woods. You know, go throw some dollars at him, give it a chance, see if you like it, and see what you think, because, you know, if you don't try, you'll never know.
That's true, and you'll be missing out if you don't. Trust me, you'll regret it.
Hey, I'm telling you, I'm excited to do two nights of Kevin Steen, May 10th and May 11th. This is big deal for me. I'm very excited to get to see Kevin Steen live for the first time in my existence, and I am very excited to watch him compete versus Adam Cole on May the 10th, and I'm not sure who he's facing here in Hamilton on May the 11th, but it really doesn't matter because I'm just excited to see Kevin Steen wrestle, and I'm sure I will have a lot to say about that whatever podcast is the week after that. Who knows? Maybe even I'll convince Kevin Steen to be on this program. Maybe.
That would be sweet. The official president of the Kevin Steen fan club, Mr. James Borbath, everyone.
I don't know if I'm the official president, but I am a huge supporter of him. Go check out the Weekend Escapades. Always fun. And make sure you check out this program every week as well. We need the viewers a little more than Kevin Steen. I think he's got an audience pretty built up, but you can make time for both.
And don't worry, if you listen to our podcast, we're not going to give you a package pile driver.
Well, you never know. I mean, you never know. It could happen. I could package pile drive you. Like, come up with, if you don't start liking the Usos soon.
Oh, God, here we go.
But in all seriousness, folks, it's been fun, and hopefully you enjoyed the program, and if you did, tell a friend. We are looking to build up our audience and have more people hear our thoughts and all of that.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you guys next week.
The cream of the crop. Nobody does it better. More questions.
I'm sorry about that.
Goodbye.